Welcome to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders. You've done it all. You've walked the tightrope of success and accomplished so much in your career. Now what? How do you keep redefining your success and expanding your emotional well-being? Join us to hear talk on mindset, motivation, and your growth in handling the challenges you've experienced both in circumstances and with yourself as a leader. Welcome to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders with your host, Tracy Crossley.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Earned Wisdom, where I speak with leaders who have been through it all. Specifically, if I can talk with more than one syllable, women who have gone through the challenges of being a leader and what made them want to be a leader. So today I have with me Julie Ciardi. Hey, Julie.
Hi, so happy to be here.
I'm happy you're here. We already started talking beforehand and I'm like, oh, I better hit record because we're going to have a conversation. So let me tell you guys a little bit about her and we'll get started. So she is a business and mindset coach on a mission to help ignite women to design lives they love rather than living life by default. She is helping women wake up on Monday mornings, loving what they do and designing their lives by creating businesses or careers with intention, joy, and impact using her signature Now Goal formula, which is trademarked, by the way. And Julie teaches and coaches women how to start their dream business and is uniquely positioned to strategize for business growth, having spent 20 years in a Fortune 50 company as a sales and marketing VP. To learn more about how to work with Julie and become, and B is capitalized, by the way. You guys can't see what I'm reading, so just sharing because it's important. It is important. The version of yourself that makes the impossible possible. Visit Julie's free community, Ignite Her Society, or tune into the Ignite Her Mind podcast on your favorite streaming platform. So it's interesting. What I usually do is I start off with the question of, oh, what did you want to be when you were a little girl? But I also want to make sure that we don't skip over. It was in your bio. See, and I'm already like, what wasn't in her bio? There was something in your bio. Living life by design rather than default is so huge. So let's start with the question of, you know, what did you want to be? And then let's get into this other topic because
Honestly, Tracy, are so related to each other. So it kind of ties in quite nicely. I think that, and thank you, by the way, for having me on the show. And thank you for having shows like this because it was podcasts that helped me make the huge decision to leave a very high paying corporate career, primary breadwinner to have my own business. And it was by really hearing these kinds of interviews on podcasts like this that helped me find the courage, helped me to believe that it was possible for me too. So big thank you for that. I think it's so important that we have these conversations. But growing up, I mean, gosh, I just turned 49 this past weekend. And I will tell you that when I was growing up, entrepreneurship did not exist as it exists today. If it did, I probably would have said, I want to be an entrepreneur and have my own business. But that word wasn't even really used. And it was, if you had your own business, it was typically a restaurant, a hair salon, you know, maybe the car shop, you know, down the street, that it just wasn't a viable option that was talked much about. And so I actually remember struggling with, well, what do I really want to be? When I was really young, I wanted to be an astronaut or a tiger tamer. I don't even, you know, where that has come from. Although I feel like I tamed a lot of tigers at IBM, but that was just something I loved. I loved animals and I loved outer space. Like, and I still like love everything space and following the telescope and all that fun stuff. But I didn't think there was a lot of options. Once I got into school and I started going down the traditional path, being an overachiever, you know, wanting to, you know, have a competition with myself to be the best that I could be, you know, all of those things, there really wasn't any options. It was either, you know, you go work for someone else, you go to college, you go work for someone else and have a career, or you could become a lawyer or a doctor or a nurse or something like that of a profession. But none of those professions really kind of hit me. And so I decided to kind of go down that path of business, but not entrepreneurship, but working for someone else. So I, you know, went to college, did really well, you know, ended up getting my MBA as well, and kind of, you know, started with IBM and started down that path. And what's interesting, and it really ties into, you know, kind of this whole like life by design, is that there was this thing that bothered me the whole time. I kept saying, what am I? Right? Like, I wanted to be the tiger tamer. I wanted to be, you know, an astronaut, but like, what am I? And so I would have this question in those early years at IBM. You know, I just was on this path of, you know, growing. I had, you know, big goals. Like, I was going to become an executive. Like, that, like, the second I got there, I'm like, okay, what's the next achievement level I can get to? Cause that's next. And then the next, right? And that's just, you know, in my DNA. But I can remember I just wrestled with it. I always felt like something was missing. I didn't really feel like I was, you know, in the right place. I never felt like I was doing the right thing. I always felt like my soul was telling me, you're not meant to be here. You're meant to be doing something else. But I didn't know what that was. So I just kept kind of working up the ranks at IBM. And I'll never forget, Lou Gerstner came to speak. It was a small group of us. We were kind of in this next generation program for leaders at IBM. And Lou Gerstner, for anyone that doesn't know who he is, I mean, he is just an epic leader and CEO who has been CEO of Nabisco, American Express, IBM, among other things. And he came and really turned IBM around. And so he came to speak to us and he said, listen, you know, I was at Nabisco, I knew nothing about crackers. When I was at, you know, American Express, he said, I knew nothing about the financial services industry. And at IBM, I knew nothing about technology and computers. He said, what I did know was people. And I knew I was a leader. And that moment, Tracy, it's like, I get the chills saying it right now. But in that moment, sitting in that room, when he said that, I went, that's what I am. I'm a leader. And that is where it kind of all crystallized for me, that I knew I was a leader and that's what I wanted to be. I didn't know that it was going to be necessarily always staying, you know, in that particular career, but that was that moment that just was so crystal clear that, well, that's what I want to be. I want to be a leader. And that was just a really, just a defining moment. And I've really taken that with me. I do see myself as a leader now in just a different way in my own company.
Right. I think that, you know, a lot of times when we're entrepreneurs, we don't necessarily see ourselves as leaders, but it is, I think, the ultimate in leadership, because you're not just leading a business, you're leading yourself, and you're leading somewhere you haven't been and the business hasn't been. Right.
So yeah, my clients, because where, what I'm really focused on is it, like what you were asking earlier, is live by design. I have been living by default for so many decades, right? Like the shoulds, like should to me and default are the same thing. You know, I should, you know, I should have a successful career and it should look like this. And I should be making this kind of money and I should be, you know, in this kind of profession or all the things. And I wasn't happy. I was not happy in my work. I truly wasn't, for especially probably the last 5 years of my corporate career. Was I was in a really challenging place because I knew in my heart that this isn't where I wanted to be. At the same time, I was the primary breadwinner for my family of five, my husband, God bless him, a police officer. And I, you know, was full force on my career to afford the kind of lifestyle and where we wanted to live and all the things. So I really felt trapped. You know, I call it the income lifestyle trap. Because you don't have a gap anymore. You're making great money, but now you're trapped because the size of the house that you have, everyone's used to these vacations and the cars you drive and all of these things. And what now, mommy's going to take that all away because she's going to go pursue her own, you know, her own career, her own business, you know, make some changes. It was really challenging. So I kind of stayed stuck, you know, for probably a good 5 years where I knew I wanted to make a change, but I was so afraid and had a lot of guilt of really upsetting the dynamic of the family that we kind of had gotten stuck into. And that to me is a great example of living by default, right? Thinking that you're trapped, thinking that this is just how it is. And it's not. You know, when I started to really understand that no, I was waiting for something to happen, you know, like kind of waiting for like maybe the right moment or something to happen or the kids to go off to college.
To interrupt you for a second, you know, one thing I would say, because I don't want to lose this thought, is that most of us, I'm going to say this, are waiting to be rescued on some level. Like we are still living in a fairy tale when we were children, right? And there's this idea that the prince or something is going to come along and it's going to change our life, or it's going to make it easier to make these kind of decisions that are life altering and scary as hell.
Yeah, totally. And you know what's interesting is I've really thought about this, about the prince and the princess. And I like what's been really challenging for me in my life is I've tried to play both roles and they battle each other.
Right.
As though there's this part of me that's like exactly what you just said. Like, can't someone take care of me this time? You know, like, why is this on my shoulders? Right. And then they have this other side. It's like, pick yourself up because we've got this. And, you know, and that ambition. And like, I am my own worst enemy, you know, with the two sides of that, instead of just, you know, actually being able to be both without the conflict, right?
Right.
So for me, the living by design was this epiphany that if I wanted a certain outcome or result in my life, I needed to make it happen. There was no one else coming. There was nothing else that was going to be done. And I was looking into a lot of different ideas and all the things. And I ended up, it's a book behind me, it changed everything for me. And it's a book called the Top Five Secrets of the Dying. And it's a book by a woman named Bronnie Ware. And she had left corporate and became an end of life caregiver. And so she wasn't a nurse or anything like that. But she just literally would, you know, go and for those that were end of life. And she did it for so long that she started to see a pattern of the top regrets that people would share with her at the end of their life. And let me tell you, I was turning 40. I had just had my third child. I was in a career I did not love, feeling completely trapped. And when I read that book, and I said, this is it. It was almost like that was my that's it moment, was reading that book. I've been thinking about it, playing with some ideas for way too long. Like probably 10 years, I've been entertaining the idea of doing my own thing. Longer than 10, 20 years. And I just, that's it. I said, I don't want any regrets. I don't want to be, you know, 80, 90, 95, where, however, God willing, I get long, I get to live and look back and wish that I had done something different. Wish that I had tried that. And so that was the catalyst. And I went on a business trip for IBM and I was flying from New York to Dallas. And on that flight, I literally kind of just wrote out like what I was going to do and how I was going to do it and all the things. And I can remember an accountant had said to us once, he's like, it's not about how much money you make. It's about how much money you keep. And it just stuck with me. And I came home and I sat down with my husband. I said, listen, I have to leave. I have to do my own thing. And the worst case scenario, I go back and I work for someone else, but I've got to try this. And I said, and I have an idea for how we can do this and lighten the load a little bit as we do this. And he's like, okay. I said, we need to sell this house. We were living in like this 4,000 square foot house in New York, ridiculous taxes, all the things. And I said, let's take a step out of this lifestyle for a hot minute and allow me some breathing room to work on building my own thing. And that was 7 years ago that we made that decision. It was like the scariest, boldest, and best decision I have ever made. And we ended up starting a trend. Like so many people were like, wait, what? Like it just started to change everyone's perspective, right? Because you think about, everyone's so used to you're on this path up. Right. So you're on the path up, you have the apartment and then you get the bigger house and then you know, and then everything's right. getting right. better and better and better.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, I still want, there's things I want and I desire and I have want a certain lifestyle, but I'm going to take a little exit ramp for a hot second. And I want to go up a different pathway. And taking that pause was the best thing that we possibly could have done, because it let go of some of that pressure. Because when you're building a business, I mean, my goodness, it's, you don't want that pressure on top of it. Like, this has to work. If this doesn't work, you know, we're going under, or, you know, I'm going back to corporate. And it's, when we talk about being a leader, mm-hmm. earned wisdom, I feel like that's something I love to share, is like sometimes just taking a step back and just looking at things with a different perspective and deciding, is this how it has to be? How do I want it to be? Deciding right. to do it by design right. rather than, well, this is just how it is.
Right.
Right. And being a leader in for yourself in making some of these really bold moves and decisions that are scary, but can literally alter the trajectory of your life.
I agree with that. I think that, you know, and this is for the listeners, that it's, you know, even though, Julie, you're describing, you know, you guys made this move, there's a lot that goes into that, because there's loss. There is loss, and there's loss anytime you make a choice, right? It's like, if you make this choice over here on the right, you're not making the left, well, then there's loss over here on the left. But it's the point of where you're at with yourself that you can make those choices. And, you know, and you're, you know, fortunate that you could downsize enough that there wasn't the pressure, because there's a lot of people, myself included, who have had to do it with all the pressure and still go, okay, I got to get up in the morning and I got to do this.
Let me tell you, that was just a thought that there wasn't going to be any pressure. Mm-hmm. The following 18 months after we sold that house were the hardest 18 months of my entire life and our marriage, because the pressure was massive. So even though the house payments we reduced by 60%, the pressure for the business to grow and be what it was, like paying myself the same amount of money that I was making at IBM, let me tell you, that pressure was real and it was hard. And it was, you know, I'm very transparent about it, because it's not like it's all rainbows and unicorns. It was the hardest. Now, what I always share is that in that 18 months, I had to find the belief in myself, because as the days went on, my husband's belief went the opposite way.
Right. Right.
Because to build a business, it takes time, consistency, being persistent, being willing to fail forward, trying some things that work, others that absolutely don't work. And it's, mm-hmm. I never lost sight of the dream, but my biggest personal growth and development of my entire life happened in those 18 months from the moment I left IBM until the business was really in a position where it was growing. I was putting myself on the payroll. I had a couple of employees, and still the pressure doesn't go away. That was like, you know, 4 years ago. Pressure still doesn't go away. It's there every single day. But what I love to say is I would rather feel the pressure of what I feel now every day, loving what I get to do, than the pressure and the stress that I had in a high paying, highly visible role of vice president, which I didn't love what I was doing. Right. And so, but that never goes away. It's like that pressure right. and the responsibility mm-hmm. always there.
Right. They are always there. And I think it's also, I mean, I've been in business for 15 years, and I would say, you know, right now I've been going through a pivot. And that's something that I'm finding when I'm talking to women, especially their 40s, their 50s, and their 60s, where it's, hey, you know what, I've been doing this, even if they're an entrepreneur, been doing this for this long, and I can't stand what I do anymore. I want to do something different. So it's not just people in corporate becoming entrepreneurs. It's also entrepreneurs going, what the fuck am I going to do? Because I have an audience and I have a business that has money coming in, right? Revenue. Oh boy, what am I going to do? I'm going to drop a bomb in the middle of this so that I can move to a different direction. And I think that it's, if you really pay attention, and I don't know if men do this as much as women, but when you really do start paying attention to yourself, you grow, right? You're growing. So I think through your growth, these things become apparent, like, oh, you know what? I'm growing to here. What I was doing doesn't appeal to me as much.
Totally.
So one thing you said that I want to go back to with all that I just said is you said you had to develop a belief in yourself. And I think that's one of the hardest things for most of us to do. We can believe in the things we do. I can believe in my talents, as, you know, in sales and marketing, but I got to believe in me that I can do this. And then you add a pivot or something else onto that. And it's like, you still have to keep believing. Holy crap. That is hard to do.
Yeah. It's hard, but it's the most important thing possible, right? If you really want to live life by design and you want to live a life where, listen, life is always going to have negative and positive emotions. There's no escaping it. It's just, it is what it is. But for to have the best possible life you can have, you have to have a relationship with yourself that continues to evolve, to grow, to see the paradigms that are holding you back, that you, that like the shadows, right? The shadows that like you just keep repeating them until we learn them, and that compassion. So what we do, the way that I really work with my clients, and it came about from doing it myself first, was thinking about that next big goal that I would have. I call it the now goal, right? And the now goal is, you know, the goal you're working on now. It's not the someday goal. It's not the should goal. It's this next big impossible goal that you're working on now. It's where your passion, your obsession, where your focus, where every, all your energy is going into as you're working on this one big impossible goal. And so for me at the time, you know, when I was first starting, it was, if I could get the business to at least be making $10,000 a month, like I would, I could at least not go back to corporate and continue to work on growing my business. It was like this milestone of recurring income that I had to get that business to. So that was my big now goal. And I had gotten the advice, you know, I was like, I felt like I was doing everything. Like, I'm doing everything. And I, you know, I have no problem with working long hours and doing all the things. And I felt like I was doing everything and it wasn't working. And it's when I first heard the concept, you may be familiar with it, some of your listeners, but the be do have concept. So I kept hearing like, okay, what do I need to do myself? What do I need to do? What do I need to do so that I can have $10,000 a month and then I can be free, then I can be happy, then I can be safe and not have to go back to corporate. That's how we do everything, right? The thing that we want, we're doing it because we want an outcome. We want to feel a certain way. We want to, you know, feel safe or be happy, but we have it backwards. And I'll never forget, I was listening to a podcast. It was like six years ago. And the guy said, you have all this wrong. It's who do I need to be? Then what do I need to do so that I can have? Who does Julie need to be? Then what do I need to do to have $10,000 months in my business? And that shift, it's what I teach at the core. It's who do you need to be? We always, our brain goes to the question, what do I need to do? And the doing is only as good as the person doing it. It's the being. The being is more important than the doing. And so the work you have to do on yourself, and what I like to do is when you take that now goal, you say, okay, how does she feel? You're already making $10,000 a month. How does she feel? What is she doing? What is she thinking? What is she feeling? What is life like? How are her days looking like? What is she, where is she putting her effort? And the funny thing is the answers come because we actually already know what we need to do. But we get into overwhelm and confusion and we have self-doubt and we've got all this like chitter chatter of who we are right now. And so I love to tap into who do I need to be? And I really envision like me that has that goal achieved. Who is she? What's different about her? And I almost look at this gap. I call
it the tipping list. What was different with you? Like what was different from where you were to what you had to become?
Belief that it was inevitable. That was a big one. So I started this whole thing, this like my success is inevitable. Like stop making it have to happen tomorrow because it's already done, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm already making $10,000 a month, I'm not thinking about that anymore. I'm not stuck in that worry of how can I do this? I'm just doing my business. So what am I doing, right? And so this idea of this belief that my goal will happen, like this, my success is inevitable mm-hmm. was a big one, belief. But also I had, there was a couple of big ones. It was calendar integrity. So really watching shiny object syndrome and like being all, and like really being focused, like putting on the calendar what I was going to do in my business and doing it. Because if I was already making $10,000 a month in my business, that's what I would be doing. I'd have total calendar integrity. I also realized because I was at the beginning of my business. I still felt like I had some niche drama. I still felt like I was like, well, who am I really talking to? And what is my message and all the things? And I thought, well, she'd already know. So she's already making $10,000 a month. She already is talking to her person. She's showing up and she knows her clients because she's got all these clients, whatever, right? So it really forced me to go, I need to be talking in my marketing, in my messaging to my person. Yeah. And so I started to get more clarity on who I was going to be speaking with and what I wanted to say and going all in on that. And I started to show up differently online. I started to show up just talking to that person versus the Julie that was over here that didn't have that yet was still like when she was going live saying, oh, my brother-in-law is watching me and that one's watching me and this one, like, but me being her, I just spoke to my person, the message that she needed to hear despite anyone else that might be present and watching. So my voice changed. How I said what I said changed. Like these are like real like changes, right? By actually trying to embody this version of me, not someone else, you know, like me. And so this becoming her became this like ongoing thread. All my clients use it like, well, okay, I'm being her now. And we always talk about her. It's like that version of us that already has this goal achieved. She's like, she's on your one shoulder and all your paradigms and stories and limiting beliefs and patterns are on this side. Mm-hmm. And it's a battle. It's like the biggest battle ever, right? And so it's learning how to tap in and listen to her a heck of a lot more, but embody her, being her. It's not easy. And it's practice, right? It's almost like you got to practice mm-hmm. being that version until you are that version.
Right. Well, it makes me think of something because, you know, in my business, when I first started, I was a love coach. I got into coaching by, I always say I fell into it. Yeah. But I, at the time, I'm like, it doesn't really kind of fit right. And then it was, well, maybe I'm a relationship coach because I was looking at what I was doing with the people that were drawn to me. Right. And that's kind of how I think a lot of people do it. It's like that. It's almost like a default though. It's like, well, who's drawn to me and what I'm doing. And then I'm going to figure out who I am from that, but that may not actually be a match. It took me probably 5 or 6 years to really get into whatever my niche was at the time, which I've been moving out of, but it's interesting. It took me that long. And it was something that I felt like I finally embodied, that I felt like in my body, oh, this is what it is, you know? And it wasn't a huge pivot at the time. It was more of a refining and the kind of clarity that I think is hard when women are getting out there and, you know, they're starting a business. I'm going to be a life coach. I'm going to be a business coach. I'm going to be a whatever. There's so many different kinds of coaching, but it's that, you know, you think I have all these talents. So people just be drawn to me, but why are they drawn to you? And what is it you're putting out there? And do you actually agree with what you're putting out there? Because do you agree with who you're actually attracting?
Yes. And here's the thing. Your niche is it's not a start stop. It's exactly how you described it is how this goes. It's like this like thing of clay. And over time, you're chiseling away at it and, you know, figuring it out. You don't figure out your niche behind a computer, not with people, right? It's right. Like you can start there, but then it's always refining. It's always like one of the best pieces of advice I've ever gotten was, especially once you're starting to work with some clients, you know, and you just sit, you can take a step back and you start to reflect and get like sticky notes and you have a yes and a no. Do it on a window, do it on a wall, yes and no. And you write the name of every client you have on an individual sticky note. And lovingly asking yourself, like, are they a yes client or a no client, right? Even though you can love them, but they're just not, whatever reason, right? And you just put the clients on either column. And then you look and you get really honest, like, well, why are they a no? Why are they a no? Are there patterns of why are these people all a no? Same thing on the yeses. Well, why do I love working with them? What is it about these people? I love working with them. Are there patterns here? And it's so cool because you refine your message because listen, your current messaging got both of them in, right?
Right.
How can I refine my message? How can I refine my niche? How can I show up a little different so that I'm getting more of them? And it's such a powerful thing. And it's something that I've done, you know, for 5 years now. And it's so cool because then you actually get to go and test it out. You start showing up that way, speaking that way with the right message. And believe it or not, you start getting more of those clients. And then you keep doing that and you continue to refine until you start to really even niche even deeper, because now you've got all that experience working very specifically with your dream client and you want to get more of her. Right. And so it's just, you're never done. I'm never done with my niche. It's to me, this is the way I look at it. You plus your niche equals your brand.
Right.
Right. You got to keep working on you.
Mm-hmm.
Never done there.
Right.
We've got to, you know, we continue to refine our niche. And over time, that starts to just continue to build this brand that is referable and bookable and visible and all of those things. But it's over time, you know, that yeah. equation and working the different pieces happen. It's definitely not overnight or knowing
it. Yeah. I think some people come into, especially with coaching, I'll just put my sign out there and people will show up. And it's like, yeah, that doesn't work that way. So
not so much. I wish. I'm sorry, but no.
Yeah, it does not. It does not. I would say that to so many people that I've even trained in coaching, you know, I'm like, this is a hard business you're getting into, you know, especially if they're not going to be working under me. They're going to go out there and hang their own sign. It's like, it takes time. It takes energy. It takes a lot that people think, oh, being a coach is easy. No, it's not. So before we go, what I'd like to know is if you have any tips that you can offer, because obviously you work with women. And so our audience, I believe, is mostly women or all women. And so if you have any tips for them and where they can find you, I know I said it in the beginning, but let's remind everybody where they
are. And a couple things changed because, again, the niche shifting. It's funny. I've been podcasting for 5 years, over 400 episodes, and the names changed like 3 times. And that's fine. That's important, right?
Oh, my God. I've had that same thing. Yes.
Like, it's good. We want that, right? So I'll give the kind of the update on that, too. I would just say, listen. If you're listening to this podcast, you're a high achiever, right? You're a high achiever in woman, whether it's in a career, whether it's in a business, whether you're starting your own thing, you're working for someone else, whatever that may be. Remember to focus as much on your own development as you do on the thing that you're doing. So if you're a leader in a company working for someone else, I wish someone told me this back at IBM, to be honest with you. I think once I got into entrepreneurship, I mean, it was baptism by fire when it came to personal development and growing me, but I would have really loved more of that back in corporate. But don't wait for your company to do something like that. That's what I would do. I'd like wait for like the company to like, you know, do this thing. Do it now. Get into focusing on your personal growth now. And if you're an entrepreneur, you know, you're already doing it. But what I would recommend is that I got in that trap of how are other people doing things? And I'll never forget like having this morning routine. You have to have this morning routine, and the morning routine should have like that. Throw it all out the window. Trust your intuition of what you need. My morning routine now looks like this. I get up before everyone else in my household and I'm working on the one big thing that's big in my business. Like that's my biggest creative time. I'm not sitting there meditating and journaling and all that kind of stuff. Then that's not what I need my most creative juices, right? I focus on what I need to get done because of this big project I got going on or any kind of content that I really need my creativity to come out with. I do it first thing in the morning. And then I do a walk after my kids go to school. And that has changed my life. Just those two things, right? It doesn't have to be these ridiculously complicated, magical morning routines that change your life, because they typically do not, because we're like not
complicated.
And they're complicated. Follow your intuition. Follow your intuition of what's right for you. If you hate meditating, don't do it.
Yeah.
If you don't like journaling, don't do it. If going for a walk is where you get all your downloads, which is where mine happen, my walk is one of my biggest business strategies I have. It's a non-negotiable. And when I'm on that walk, I'm solving all of my business problems. That works for me. Some people, meditation and journaling is the thing that works for them. So just trust yourself instead of all these other people out there. Really, you know, your body knows, your soul knows. So trust yourself in how what you need to grow you so that you can have the career and the business that you'd love to have. And then just where to find me. So juliesciardi.com, that's where we keep everything up to date and all of that. But the podcast did change. It's called Brand. So it was Ignite Her Mind. And as I really niched even deeper to help coaches end their niche drama and build their brands online, we changed the name to Brand. So I'm having so much fun with it. So, but even if you just looked up Julie Ciardi, you'll find me. There's no one else with that name. Thankfully, I thank my husband because my maiden name is O'Connor. And I think there's a lot of Julie O'Connors out there. So, so definitely check it out, but it's called Brand. Great, some great episodes on there. And you can also just, you know, go to the website. And if you want to share anything, if I love conversation, go to Instagram because you can shoot me a DM there if something, you know, you wanted to share as an epiphany or whatever. And actually, are you on Instagram?
I am.
Okay. Yes. So if you're listening, if you love this episode, let's like totally share the show. So if you guys snap like a screenshot of you listening to the show or of the actual podcast on your phone, tag us, tag Tracy and I us and put it in the stories and we'll totally share and respond. But we love the conversation. So definitely do that.
That's awesome. I love that. Thank you, Julie. And thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So everybody listening, you heard what Julie said, go do it. And if you also have any questions at all, please reach out. You can reach out to me at business@tracycrossley.com. And when you do, if it's something about this episode, and you're like, oh my God, I totally forgot. Where do I find Julie? You can ask that too. So anyways, I will see you guys next time with another wonderful leader. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining today. For more information on Tracy and her programs and to set up a discovery session, email business@tracycrossley.com. That's business@tracycrossley.com and go to tracycrossley.com to get your free download entitled Stop Your Inner Dictator. Thank you for tuning in to Earned Wisdom for Accomplished Female Leaders.